into a life of Torah and a life that had its own rhythm. Most of the Jews lived in small towns in rural Europe. It only will later, in the 1800s, will there begin large immigrations of Jews to the large cities. But until then, most of the Jews lived in small towns. Now, living in a small town in the United States is almost a guarantee to the loss of Judaism. The only place where strong Judaism has survived has been in great urban centers. But in Europe, that was almost the reverse. The small Jewish town that had 20, 30, 40 families was a strong Jewish unit, and it was a self-contained Jewish unit. Not only 20, 30 families, there were towns that did not have a minyan, where the people from the town would travel in to a larger town a number of times a year to participate in the davening, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, naturally, the Sholosh Regalim, but they would come like for Parsha Zohar, they would travel in. But all year round, they were without a minyan. And they remained intensely Jewish. And to look back on it and see how they did it in the midst of a sea of alien forces, alien families, and they should remain Jewish. So that only is a testimony again to that type of society that Eastern European Jewry had. I mean, there were in the United States, there also existed. It didn't perpetuate itself, but it existed originally. I knew a family from a little town outside of Wheeling, West Virginia, that he owned a dry goods store. The old Zayde that came was closed on Shabbos, and he observed Chol of Yisrael. I mean, everything. I knew his daughters and his sons-in-law and his grandchildren who were members of mine in Miami Beach. And they were the only Jewish family like for 50 miles around. And they came to Miami, they complained they couldn't have Chol of Yisrael. In their little town, he made all the... Yeah. So... That's how Jewish life looked in Eastern Europe. And to be a rabbi in one of these small towns was an honor. They all had rabbis, most of them. And they all had a shochet. And they all had the necessary religious infrastructure, even though you're talking about a very small base. Naturally, the rabbi was not paid a great salary. No one was paid a great salary. And it was all hand to mouth and hunger. My father-in-law, should live and be well, was a rabbi in the town in Lithuania in Vashkita that had 41 Jewish families. And his wages were 3 kopekas a week plus a goat that they gave them. They used to, my mother-in-law, she used to milk the goat every morning. I mean, that was, in many communities, the rabbi's salary was that the Rebbetzin sold the salt. She had the salt monopoly, or she had the candle monopoly. So then that's how they supported themselves. But you couldn't live. But if you had 40 Jewish families, you had to have, And rabbis competed for the job. And some of those jobs were very, very prestigious jobs, well known throughout the world, but the town was a zero. So that type of life in Eastern Europe existed. And also in Eastern Europe, the idea of yeshivas came early, though not yeshivas as we know them today, but there nevertheless were yeshivas. There were great Talmidei Chachamim who established yeshivas throughout Poland, throughout Lithuania, throughout Russia. The idea of learning. In fact, the job, the task, the main task of the rabbi in town was to learn. And he would teach others, and the young men in the town who wanted to study would study with him. And if he found somebody that he thought had true promise, so he would send them on to the next town, to a larger town, to study with a greater rabbi. And that's how the educational system worked. And the Jews set up their own educational system in Poland of what we call the cheder. Jewish children went from the age of 3 till the age of bar mitzvah.